Stephen Dobbin Dham Pujari. Ganga Devi, Jamuni Devi, Tulsi Devi Pujari. Shrimati Bhakti Devi Pujari. Gorkha. All glorious to the assembled devotees. All glorious to the assembled devotees. All glorious to the lotus feet of Shri Shri Guru. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
We're continuing our study of Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 12, Chapter 3, text number, what is it?
50, 51, 52.
Mriyamanir. Abhidyeyo. Bhagavan. Parameshvara. Atma Bhavam Nayat Yanga Savartma Sarvasantraya Mriyamanir Abhidyeyo Bhagavan Parameshvara Atma Bhavam Nayat Yanga Sarvatma Sarvasamchaya Mriyamanir Abhidyeyo Bhagavan Paramishvara Atma Bhavan Nayatyanga Sarvatma Sarvasamchaya Mriyamanir Abhidyeyo Bhagavan Parameshvara Atma Bhavam Nayatyanga Saratma Sarvasamchaya Mriyamanir Abhidyeyo Bhagavan Paramishvara Atma Bhavam Nayatyanga Sarvatma Sarvasamchaya Ladies? Mriyamanir Abhidyeyo Bhagavan Paramishvara Bhavam Nayatyanga Sarvatma Sarvasamchaya Mriyamanai. By those who are dying. Abhidyeya. Meditated upon. Bhagavan. The personality of Godhead. Parama-Ishvara, the Supreme Lord. Atma-Bhavam, their own true identity. Nayati, leads them to. Anga, my dear King. Sarvatma, the Supreme Soul. Sarvasamchaya, the shelter of all beings. Translation. My dear King, the personality of Godhead is the ultimate controller. He is the supreme soul and the supreme shelter of all beings. When meditated upon by those about to die, he reveals to them their own eternal spiritual identity. Yes, responsibly. My dear King, the personality of Godhead
is the ultimate controller.
He is the Supreme Soul.
He is the Supreme Soul.
And the Supreme Shelter of all beings.
And the Supreme Shelter of all beings.
When meditated upon.
By those about to die.
He reveals to them.
Their own eternal spiritual identity.
So we can read together text 51. Kalir dosha nide rajan asti eko mahaguna kirtana deva krishnasya mukta sangha parambuja. Translation. My dear king, although Kali Yuga is an ocean of faults, there is still one good quality about this age. Simply by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, one can become free from material bondage and be promoted to the transcendental kingdom. We should repeat that. My dear king, although Kali Yuga is an ocean of faults, there is still one good quality about this age. Simply by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra,
one can become free
from material bondage
and be promoted to the transcendental kingdom.
Purport. After mentioning the innumerable faults of this age of Kali, Shukadeva Goswami now mentions its one brilliant aspect. Just as one powerful king can kill innumerable thieves, one brilliant spiritual quality can destroy all the contamination of this age. It is impossible to overestimate the importance of chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, especially in this fallen age. Text 52. Kritaya Dayato Vishnu, Tritayam Yajato Makai, Dwarkare Paritayam, Kalauta Dari Kirtana. Translation. Whatever result was obtained in such a yuga by meditating on Vishnu, in Treta Yuga by performing sacrifices, and in Dwarpara Yuga by serving the Lord's lotus feet, can be attained in Kali Yuga simply by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra responsibly. Whatever result was obtained
in such a yuga
by meditating on Vishnu,
in
Treta
Yuga,
by performing sacrifices,
and in Dwarpara Yuga,
by serving the Lord's lotus feet,
can be obtained in Kali Yuga
simply by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Purport. A similar verse is found in the Vishnu Purana, also in the Padma Purana, and the Brihan Naradiya Purana. Jayan krite yajan jagyais, chaitayam dwapare archayam, yadapnuti tadapnuti kalau sankirtya keshava. Whatever is achieved by meditation in Satya Yuga, by the performance of sacrifice in Treta Yuga, and by the worship of Lord Krishna's lotus feet in Dwapara Yuga, is obtained in the age of Kali simply by glorifying the name of Lord Keshava. Srila Jiva Goswami has further quoted from the Brahma Vaivarta Purana concerning the degraded condition of people in Kali Yuga. Atta kalau tapo yoga vidya jagadika kriya sangha bhavanti na krita kushalir api dehi. Thus, in the age of Kali, the practices of austerity, yoga meditation, deity worship, sacrifice, and so on, along with their various subsidiary functions, are not properly carried out, even by the most expert embodied souls. End quote. Srila Jiva Goswami has also cited the Chaturmasya Mahatmya of the Skanda Purana concerning the necessity of chanting Hare Krishna in this age. Tata chaivo tamam loke tapashi hari kirtana kalau yuge visheshena Vishnu Kritai Samachara. In this way, the most perfect penance to be executed in this world is the chanting of the name of Lord Sri Hari. Especially in the age of Kali, one can satisfy the Supreme Lord Vishnu by performing some kirtan. In conclusion, massive propaganda should be made all over the world to induce people to chant the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, by which human society can be rescued from the dangerous ocean of the age of Kali. Thus end the purports of the humble servants of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada to the 12th canto, 3rd chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Bhumi Gita. So as Prana Govinda pointed out, these are extremely important verses. They are the very foundation and crux of our Vaishnava faith and the religion of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They are repeated incessantly, quoted by our founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada in his writings and expressed in his lectures. And not only within our sampradaya, this Brahma Madhva Gaudiya sampradaya, which is headed by Lord Brahma, but within the other three sampradayas. Also, these verses are quoted as the foundational tenet for the practice of the age of Kali, practice of religion, and rightly so, because the bona fide spiritual master and the bona fide representative of Krishna will only repeat what is given in the Vedic scriptures. The spiritual master, the sadhus, the shastra, they are always synonymous. The spiritual master is bona fide to the extent that the spiritual master repeats without changing the timeless, eternal message of the Vedic scriptures. This Srila Prabhupada explains again and again, and he quotes certain texts from the Vedas in support of this. So, so much might be said, one could speak for days and days about the importance of these texts and the meanings of these texts. The this verse, that whatever result is obtained in other yugas is obtained by chanting of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, or we, because of our association and connection to Lord Chaitanya, we especially stress the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. In some lectures, Srila Prabhupada presents it more generally. Kirtanadeva Krishnasya, singing the holy names of Lord Krishna. And as Lord Chaitanya teaches in the second verse of his Shikshashtaka, that Lord Krishna has hundreds and millions of names, and each of them are equally potent. And we see that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would sing different bhajans. Hari Haraya Nama Krishna, Gopal Govinda Ram, Shima Dusudan, Krishna, 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 Krishna. Different bhajans, not just the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. But this Hare Krishna Mahamantra is specifically cited as being the most efficacious and powerful stringing together of Lord Krishna's holy names. And Lord Chaitanya specifically chanted the Hare Krishna Mahamantra in private japa and in kirtan. And as followers of Lord Chaitanya, we also promote specifically and expressly this chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Now these verses speak about sacrifice, and I wanted to speak about that. So what are some of the meanings of sacrifice? What does it mean to sacrifice? Someone?
To make sacred.
To make sacred. Something else?
For others' pleasure.
For others' pleasure. What for others' pleasure? What is sacrifice? When we do sacrifice, what are we doing? What does one do?
Make offering.
Make offering. Well, one, what I'm thinking of, is we set aside as sacred. We give up, just like during fire yagas, we sacrifice grains into the fire. We put ghee into the fire. We give up something. This is one of the dictionary definitions of sacrifice. When we're in school and we could go out at night and have fun, and instead we stay home to study, we're sacrificing. We're giving up something for another purpose. So this is sacrifice, yes? As Srila Prabhupada speaks in the 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, how one can serve Krishna with one's intelligence, with labor, with money, with land, by sacrificing them, giving them to Krishna, specifically by giving them to the missionary movement of Lord Chaitanya, of Krishna. And we sacrifice according to what we value. You see this? That we could go out at night and party, but because we value our future and the potential of a good job, we stay home and we study. Because we value, ultimately, our own future happiness. When a mother takes, or a father, takes special effort and time to cook something for the children, sacrificing their time. It may be hot in the kitchen. They sacrifice their comfort. Why? Because they value the children. What we value, we sacrifice for. We give up something. Does everyone see this? Yeah? Anyone disagree? So performing sacrifice, in part, I'm bringing out, means to show value. You know, the husband or the wife may say, I love you, but, you know, show me. And so when the husband brings something home that the wife mentioned sometime in the past, oh, you really care. You remember I had wanted this thing. You took the trouble to do this. So it's a sign of valuation. And we as human beings, as souls, we don't do well when we're not valued, do we? When we don't feel loved, when a child doesn't feel truly valued, or a wife, or a husband, or a parent, we don't do well. Why? Why is that? Why do we not do well when we don't feel valued and wanted? Why? Come on now. Someone say something. Because we want to be loved. It is our nature to be loved. Oh, you wanted me to say it. Because it's our nature to love and be loved. And there's nothing that gives us more happiness than love. There have been surveys taken that in workplaces, although companies may give benefit packages, it has been found that generally, when the employees feel genuinely wanted, genuinely valued, they really put out the extra effort because they feel loved. As we may remember from Srila Prabhupada's introduction to Nectar Devotion, he describes there, Srila Rupa Goswami describes, that we all have a propensity to love. And but the difficulty is that in this material world, we're loving things that are imperfect and temporary. And the only thing that will really satisfy us is the revival of our original loving relationship with Krishna. So when we, as a child or as a spouse or a parent, see the sacrifice of someone, we take it that they value us. And Krishna is the same way. Whenever we hear the Vaishnava saints explaining to us that Bhagavan, Krishna, he is the Parama Purusha, he is the Supreme Person, and whatever good qualities we have, he has. We have them because he has them. We enjoy being loved because he enjoys being loved. And so when we do sacrifice for Krishna, we are showing that we value him. We are taking our ghee, we're taking our bananas, we're taking our sesame seeds, and we're throwing them in the fire, Lord Vishnu, because we value you. And we're taking the time to sing bhajan, kirtan, because we value you. We could be doing so many other things with our time. We could be watching television, or playing video games, or doing this, or so many different things we may do. But when we take the time and sacrifice it, that I'm going to hear about Krishna. From Lord Krishna's point of view, wow, they value me. You know, the reading and studying of Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita and our bhakti shastras, it is not nearly an intellectual enterprise as it is an expression of valuation. When we sit there and we're thinking, this is boring, I don't want to do it, I want to go do this, but no, I want to advance in Krishna consciousness. I want to increase my love of Krishna. And we do it anyway. Krishna becomes touched. Like any person. Shrinvata swakata Krishna, punya shravana kirtana, riryanta stoa bhajani, vidanoti saritsita. That verse describes in the purport that Lord Krishna, when he sees that we're interested to hear about him, he really likes that. Like anyone would. And in reciprocation, he takes his broom and he cleanses our heart. Cheto darpana marjanam bhava mahadavi devagni nirvarpanam. The very first verse of the Shikshashtaka. That when we hear about Krishna, when we glorify him. So I noticed that in this text here, that the last verse, and then there's a quotation, simply by glorifying the name of Lord Keshava. Not just saying. What is the definition of Sankirtan? What does Sankirtan mean? Who remembers? Huh? Congregation. So Sun means together. And Kirtan is not music, right? Glorification. It has a mood that, oh, Lord Krishna, oh, Srimati Radharani, you're so wonderful. Hare Krishna. It's glorification. And Krishna becomes attracted by that, right? Isn't it? Why or how could God become a little boy, Damodar, and be running in fear of Mother Yashoda? You know, how could that be? Why would God do such a thing? It's unimaginable, you know. But because of the love of Mother Yashoda, because Mother Yashoda wants to love Krishna like that, so Krishna agrees that, all right, then I will act as your perfect son, and I will be naughty, and I will do things so you have to chase me. Yes. But it's all based upon love, isn't it? we hear, what's that? Pacham pusvam palam toyam yome bhakcha, bhakcha, bhakti. Bhakcha mam avijananti, in the 11th chapter, isn't it? That I am, I can only be understood as I am by bhakti. I mean, we're not foaming at the mouth fanatics that no one can understand God. There's many ways to understand God. But Lord Krishna says one can only understand me fully in my two-armed form as the chariot driver of Arjuna, as the playful coward boy amongst the coward boys, by bhakti. So this chanting of Hare Krishna, the singing of Krishna's holy names, bhakti. And gradually, Śrīla Prabhupāda instructs us that as we go on performing bhakti, the sacrifice of showing our interest in Krishna, our appreciation for Krishna, our affection for Krishna, then in reciprocation, he reveals himself. There's a wonderful letter where Śrīla Prabhupāda describes to someone who asked that you just go on chanting Hare Krishna, reading these books, performing sankirtan, and then gradually, just as the sun rises, Krishna will reveal himself to you by the strength of our devotion. That, oh, you really want me. All right, you really want me? Take me. Yeah? But Krishna is equal. You don't want me? You don't want to know about me? Well, fine. If that's what you think you want, then don't for a while. But I love you so much that I will come back again and again. Parichanaya sadhanam vinashya chatuskutam. Because I love you and I want you, I will come back again and again to rescue you. Right? So we have that wonderful bhajan by Śrīla Bhaktivinoda Thakura. So many wonderful bhajans. This is from the Arundhaya Kirtan set of Śrīla Bhaktivinoda Thakura's Gītāvali. You can hear Śrīla Bhaktivinoda Thakura glorify the chanting of Hare Krishna. I can hardly do justice for it. When a tinge of red on the eastern horizon heralded the sunrise, the jewel of the twice-born Lord Gaurasundar immediately awakened. Taking his devotees with him, he went all over the countryside, visiting the towns and villages of Nadia. The mridangas resounded tatai, tatai. The cymbals chimed in time, and Lord Gauranga's footbells jingled as his golden form trembled slightly in ecstatic love of God. Lord Chaitanya called out to the townsfolk, "You spend your nights uselessly sleeping, and your days decorating your bodies. Now, just fill your mouths with the vibration of the holy names Mukunda, Madhava, Yadava, and Hari, chanting without offense. You have achieved the rare human body. Don't you care for this gift? If you do not serve the darling of Yashoda now, great sorrow awaits you at death. Each time the sun rises and sets, a day passes and is lost. Then why do you remain idle and refuse to serve the Lord of the heart? Understand this essential fact. Life is temporary and full of all kinds of miseries. So make it your only business to take shelter of the holy name and always engage in his service. Desiring to bless all souls, the sweet name of Krishna has descended to the material world and now shines like the sun in the sky of the heart, destroying the darkness of ignorance. Drink the pure nectar of the holy name of Krishna and thus satisfy the soul of Bhakti Vinod. There is nothing but the holy name within all the 14 worlds. So, you know, one thing catches my attention, and I thought about it before class today, that we hear about the wonderful ecstasy of chanting Hare Krishna, and Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Rupa Goswami and the different acharyas speaking about how they wish they had millions of mouths to drink the nectar. So where is it for me? You know, that sounds nice, but why don't I feel like that? Someone would like to offer me a suggestion? Why don't I feel like that? What?
Offenses.
Anything else? No, that's it, actually. No, it's sadly the truth. But yeah, isn't it that our Vaishnava acharyas, they teach us, Lord Chaitanya has taught, that if we're not feeling attracted to Krishna, if we're not feeling very interested in the Krishna consciousness movement, then it is due to offenses from the past, current offenses. What are some of the different kinds of offenses? Someone. Yeah, that's, yeah, blaspheming devotees. Vaishnava aparadha. What are other aparadhas? Yes, these are part of the 10 offenses. There's certain categories of offenses. So what are other offenses? There's seva aparad. There's dham aparad. What else? Understanding, yes. So there's different, one thing is that there's different categories of offenses to Krishna. If we speak ill of devotional service, or if we willfully show disinterest in doing some kind of service for the spiritual master or Krishna, this is seva aparadha. And then there's dham aparadha, that on the grounds of the temple or the grounds of a holy place like Mayapur or Vrindavan, one can commit offenses there. Guru aparadha, guru and Vaishnava aparadha, these are the most common and most serious offenses. And the result of offenses is that our taste for Krishna is reduced. So, if we want to increase our taste, one thing is to be very careful to avoid offenses and to remove whatever offenses that we're making. It seems as if that this chanting of Hare Krishna and this ocean of Amrita is really something worth tasting, if we can. But these offenses often block it. They're the main blockage. So how to remove the offenses is crucial. So what are some of the ways that we can nullify offenses? For Vaishnava aparadha?
Place.
Mm-hmm. Guru aparadha? How can we nullify guru aparadha? We have to pay, we have to ask forgiveness. You know, if we may make the horrible mistake. Even in our mind, this is a very subtle thing. If we, to the extent that we maintain material desires, you know, our spiritual master is often not right with us, maybe not even in the same city. We may not see the spiritual master hardly at all. But in the conversation between Sudama Brahman and Lord Krishna, Lord Krishna made this point to Sudama. He said, I am in the heart of everyone. And when I see that anyone is seriously trying to serve their spiritual master, I bless them. And then the other side is also there, that during our day, during our week, during our life, Krishna is there. And very often we bump up against some situation in which we have a choice. Am I going to follow the direction of my spiritual master or am I not? Am I going to do what he wants or not? And Lord Krishna is carrying the show, so to speak. On behalf of the spiritual master, Lord Krishna is seeing what we're doing. This is how the transcendental process works. So if we make offense to the spiritual master by ignoring his instruction, you know, that is, what's that? Is that the third offense, disobeying the orders of the spiritual master? If we show, what's the word for it, disregard or scorn, or I ain't gonna do that. this is an offense, you know. And so the result can be that we can lose our taste. If all of a sudden we find that we don't feel very attracted to our spiritual master, and we're just, it's very often due to offense. It is a sign, very likely, that we have made some offense and we have to go back. Even the spiritual master is not present and we bow down. Please help me understand what I may have done. I apologize. I'm always making offenses. Please forgive me and it will be cleared. The same thing with the deities, deity apparat. If, you know, generally speaking, we have some ongoing level of attraction to the deities. And for some stretch of days or something, or, I don't want to go to the temple. I don't want to see the deity. It's often because of some offense. Srila Prabhupada directly explained that one of the symptoms, one of the proofs that we're pleasing Krishna is that our heart will become attracted to him. And so then the reverse is that if we are displeasing Krishna and displeasing the spiritual master, our heart will become averse. Ultimately, you know, for the sinful conditioned souls, Krishna gives them a subtle body which is hardwired to be against him. You know, so we don't want that, you know. And if we commit very serious offenses, it can become like that for some days or some weeks, even longer, until the offense has been cleared. Another method of clearing offenses is to pay attention to the worship of Gauranga Nittai, to Gaur Nittai, because they don't accept offenses. And the very chanting of Nityananda Gauranga clears offenses. In the 8th chapter of the Adi Lila, Srila Prabhupada writes that for neophytes, it's actually more important to chant the names of Nityananda Gauranga than the Hare Krishna mantra. He actually says, a neophyte should not indulge in the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. They should chant Nityananda Gauranga. And then in the next verse in purport, he explains that we have to chant Hare Krishna, but we should not neglect the worship and singing of the holy names of Nityananda Gauranga, thinking that we're beyond it or something. So as today is the, birthday of Jayapataka Swami? So I remember one class he gave long, long time ago. He mentioned that he had heard from Srila Prabhupada that another part of the package of reducing our offenses is to share Krishna consciousness. Because giving this divine message of Krishna to others is so, so dear to Krishna, that even if we're not quite right, if we try to do that and assist, Krishna will turn a blind eye to many offenses, and he will help us to overcome our offenses because of, as Pani Bhushanam pointed out, seva. And we don't just chant Hare Krishna, but we also try and do some other service with the spiritual master, specifically within the mission of the spiritual master. And Srila Prabhupada was so enthusiastic to, and is, not was, is enthusiastic to engage us in Lord Chaitanya Sankirtan movement, because the service of Nityananda Gauranga is so, so powerful for removing offenses. When I was growing up, relatives would say, there'll be no talk of God in this house. And here I am sitting here. How is that possible? I'm a living example. You know, not that I'm so advanced, but it works. Yeah. So I'll stop here. Any questions or comments? Some discussion? John, anything?
I was just remembering in Narottam Das, I think it's Narottam Das Thakur's song, E Baro Karuna Koro, he mentions that when we commit offense to you, Krishna, the holy name, by chanting the holy name, we can be transcend that offense. Or, but when we offend a Vaishnav, there is no remedy for that. So anyway, that's a comment. Yeah.
Although it may be said that if one goes on chanting continually for a long time and seeks forgiveness, gradually it will be cleared. Before we go on, there's one definition of blasphemy of devotees, or blasphemy. Who knows one definition of blasphemy? What does blasphemy mean?
Belittling.
Mm-hmm. What?
Denigrating.
I heard an interesting way to understand blasphemy. When we are with a second person and we speak about a third person so that the second person walks away thinking less of the third person, that is blasphemy. That is blasphemy. Should never, never do that. Never do that. Sometimes managers or parents or people who are in some managerial position need to call a spade and need to discuss something someone is doing. But there is nothing worse. One of the main qualities of an uttam adhikari is they're completely free of their propensity to criticize others. They have nothing bad to say. Nothing. And it's very sad that we see some people who don't understand this. And it may not be part of the class, but I just want to mention that, you know, I read recently. Different things have gone on over the years, and devotees sometimes don't agree with things that are happening within ISKCON. They disagree with management and different things. And so Srila Prabhupada, there's two letters. So one of them, he says that, well, if you don't feel comfortable within this ISKCON society, if you disagree, then go away and be wherever you want to be and follow the sadhana of Krishna consciousness. But he specifically instructed, no schisms, no factions, no divisions, no anarchy. Those are his literal words, one after the other. No schisms, no factions, no divisions. If you have some difficulty, then practice Krishna consciousness wherever you want, quietly. And that's it. Any other discussions? Comments? It's just, you know, every day for many, many years, I speak to people, 2 to 10 people from around the world, devotees, people who are just interested in Krishna consciousness. And so often I have to hack through, well, I saw this on this website, and I saw this, and what about that?
You know, it's horrible. You know, if we think that Srila Prabhupada and Lord Chaitanya are pleased by that, no, absolutely not. You know, absolutely not. It's terrible. Jai, all glory to Shishu Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Hare Krishna.
All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the Lord Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 So we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, continuing in the 12th canto. Chapter 4, we'll start with the summary of the chapter, verses 1 through 4, and then we'll chant verse 4 together. The four categories of universal annihilation. This chapter discusses the four kinds of annihilation: constant, occasional, material, and final. Bhaktivedanta Academy students, pay attention to those four because you will be quizzed on those before the class is over. And the chanting of the holy name of Lord Hari, which is the only means of stopping the cycle of material life. That's a very important sentence. Let's repeat that. The chanting of the holy name of Lord Hari, which is the only means of stopping the cycle of material life. 1,000 cycles of four ages constitutes one day of Brahma. And each day of Brahma, called a kalpa, contains within it the lifetimes of 14 manus. The duration of Brahma's night is the same as that of his day. So in other words, there's 28 manus in a day and life of Lord Brahma, day and night of Lord Brahma. During his night, Brahma sleeps, and the three planetary systems meet destruction. This is called Naimittika, or occasional annihilation. When Brahma's lifespan of 100 years is finished, there occurs Aprakritika, total material annihilation. At that time, the seven elements of material nature, beginning with the Mahat, and the entire universal egg composed of them are destroyed. When a person achieves knowledge of the absolute, he understands factual reality. He perceives the entire created universe as separate from the absolute and therefore unreal. This is called Atyantika, our final annihilation, liberation. At every moment, time invisibly transforms the bodies of all created beings and all other manifestations of matter. This process of transformation causes the living entities to undergo the constant annihilation of birth and death. Those possessed of subtle vision state that all creatures, including Brahma himself, are always subject to generation and annihilation. Material life means subjugation to birth and death, or generation and annihilation. The only boat suitable for crossing the ocean of material existence, which is otherwise impossible to cross, is the boat of submissive hearing of the nectarian pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Another sentence suitable to repeat and be attentive to. The only boat suitable. You go to the shore, the ocean, or the river you want to get across, just like in the pastimes of Bhagavatam Thakur, you wanted to get across. You don't have the ability to throw your chudder down and float across on your chudder, so you have to get a boat. The only boat available to get across the ocean of material existence, which is impossible to cross, is the boat of submissive hearing of the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, such as we are all doing here at the Srimad Bhagavatam class. Text number one, Sukadev Goswami said, "My dear king, I have already described to you the measurements of time beginning from the smallest fraction measured by the movement of a single atom up to the total lifespan of Lord Brahma. I have also discussed the measurement of the different millennia of universal history. Now hear about the time of Brahma's day and the process of annihilation. The process of annihilation, which has four components." What are those four types of annihilations? Who can give me one?
Constant.
Material.
Occasional.
Final.
Final.
Yay, thank you very much. Text number two. Actually, on this first verse here, it's interesting. I think it's worth noting. The modern scientists are very proud of their technology and development with the atom. Not so modern like in our time, but in this century. The understanding of the atom and the development of the atom. Bhagavatam is a little bit older than one century, And we find that there's a discussion here by Sukadeva Goswami of time calculated from the movement of the atom. So there's nothing new. It's all been done before. Text number 2. 1,000 cycles of 4 ages. Who can name those 4 ages? Give me one of them. Garanga? Mm-hmm. Satya? Another one? Dwarpa? Another one? Kali? The third one? Yes, thank you. 1,000 cycles of 4 ages constitutes a single day of Brahma known as a kalpa. In that period, O king, 14 manus come and go. So how many manus are there in a full day of Lord Brahma? 28. Yes, you got it. 28. 14 in the day, 14 in the night. Nobody has just a day. You sleep at night. Kind of surprising it says here Lord Brahma sleeps at night. I would assume that's what anybody does, is sleep at night. So while he's sleeping, 14 more manus come. So 28 total. In that period, O king, 14 manus come and go. After one day of Brahma, annihilation occurs during his night, which is of the same duration. At that time, all 3 planetary systems are subject to destruction. That's the 3 verses. This is today's verse. Chant the Sanskrit. Esha naimattika prokta pralaya yatra vishvashrik sete natashano vishvam atmasat kritya chatmabhu esha naimattika prokta pralayo yatra vishvashrik sete nantashano vishvam atmasat kritya chatmabhu. Please chant. Isha.
This.
Namitika.
Occasional.
Prokta.
Is said.
Pralaya.
Annihilation.
Yatra.
In which.
Vishvashik.
The creator of the universe, the Supreme Lord Narayana.
Sete.
Lies down.
Ananta Asana.
Upon the snake bed of Anantasesha.
We have here, we have Vyasa Asana, the seat of Vyasadeva, the one representing him. Here in this verse, we have Ananta Asana, the seat of Anantadeva, the seat of Ananta that one sits on, Lord Vishnu.
Vishvam,
the universe.
Atmasat
Kritya.
Absorbing within himself.
Cha.
Also.
Atmabhu.
Lord Brahma.
An interesting word here. Chatma. Catma.
When I was a brahmachari, sometimes you put your name on something. You didn't want to put your devotee name on your shoes because everybody had the same shoes. So that was what I used. Chatma. Everybody would know it's chapter obvious. Anyway, just unnecessary reference.
Translation.
This, referring to the annihilation that takes place at Brahma's night, this is called the Naimittika, or occasional annihilation, during which the original creator, Lord Narayana, lies down upon the bed of Anantasesha and absorbs the entire universe within himself while Lord Brahma sleeps. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chaksurum Militam Yenatasme Sri Gurave Namaha Mukam Kuroti Vachalam Pangumlam Jayatiya Girim Yakripatamaham Bande Sri Gurum Dinatavino Vancha Kalpaturu Vyascha Kripa Sindhu Bahebacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhunitananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasti Gaur Bhaktarinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama. So this entire 12th canto, as we previously mentioned, is entitled The Age of Deterioration. And so it's quite natural that it would include a chapter that discusses the different types of annihilations of the material world. We actually have a very real experience in life that everything around us, including ourselves, begins to deteriorate. And then ultimately, after the end of the process of deterioration, it's annihilated, comes to an end, or in plain English, it dies. Let's take an orange, for instance. Everyone's seen an orange, nice bright orange color, juicy, nice and firm. You set it there. Now, an orange requires to be refrigerated if you're going to keep it in that pristine condition for some time. That's why when they pick these oranges in other countries or other parts of the country and ship them around, they have to have these refrigerated trucks and make all these arrangements and so on and so on and so on. Because what happens, there's a material connection to that orange. It is made of mundane material elements. So if you leave it sitting on the windowsill in the sun, maybe you've all had this experience. You see, over the course of time, time begins its influence, and over the course of the time, that bright orange color begins to fade. Becomes a little bit dull. And then it becomes a little bit grayish. And then it develops a little bit of blue mold. And then it doesn't look so good. And then begins to shrivel. It's no longer a nice, firm, big, you know, juicy-looking orange. It gets all discolored, and it shrivels and dries up and moldy and fungus. And this indicates that it's dead matter. Life is leaving it because it's made simply of material elements that have been disconnected from its spiritual identity. And soon, you look at that orange and nobody thinks, oh, I want to slice that open and have a nice taste of that orange. No, one picks it up like this and drops it in the garbage. Nobody wants anything to do with it. Now, we see that this also, quite matter-of-factly, happens to this body that we have. Very young, very youthful, very energetic, maybe too much energy, some of the teachers might say, especially on Friday afternoons, but very, very enthusiastic to do things and act and move and stretch it. Just like when my granddaughter was here, you know, she's just learning about this body she's in and she's flapping her arms and legs, wanting to move them, and she can't do anything with them. She hasn't figured that out yet. So, but constantly moving because so much energy and life is there. It's all just beginning. Oh, how exciting! But it doesn't stay that way. Eventually, after some number of years, and that depends on the individual, but after some number of years, things begin to break down. Due to age, what happens? Again, we see the time factor steps in and begins to take its toll. The eyes that were once very sharp and could see all the way across to the pavilion now require some type of spectacles to be able to see anything properly. This happened to me when I was just about 50. Just as I was turning 50, I remember my eyes started to fade a bit. I had to get reading glasses. Then what happens is the cartilage between your joints, from all the jumping and running and bouncing and activity, it begins to wear out. And the cartilage doesn't work so well, and the joints begin to ache. And you get up in the morning, it's painful. This started happening to me when I was about 62. You notice, oh, these things aren't working the way they used to. Sometimes the digestion, I can give any of you 10 cookies, you can eat them with no problem. I can give Gopal 20 glubjiments, he'll eat them all in one spot. And will there be stomach ache afterwards? No, because the fire digestion's at its peak. But sometimes when you get older, the digestion doesn't work so well, you can't eat so much. Fortunately, that hasn't happened to me, I can eat almost anything you put in front of me. A little bit further down the line, what happens? Time continues to march on, and this material vehicle of this body can no longer support the living conditions that the soul requires to live there, and the soul leaves, or again in plain English, death. So similarly, this universe, because what is the universe except a giant organism similar to the one we have? So it has four ages. We mentioned those earlier. Everybody took their turn in remembering them. And each one progresses towards the next, going from the best condition and beginning to diminish till we come to the Kali Yuga. What's the title of this chapter? Who can tell me the title of this chapter? I mean, this canto of the Bhagavatam. You just said it. The age of deterioration. Everything is beginning to decline. Satya Yuga, is that the age of deterioration? No. Treta Yuga? No. Dwapara Yuga? No. Kali Yuga. That's when everything starts to go downhill. So, we see this happens in the universe too. Until the universe requires annihilation. And in this chapter here, we're going to learn about the four different types of annihilation. Now we only die, that's it, boom, we're gone. But the universe has four different ways that it goes. So that's all going to be explained in this chapter. Now, time. Time is ever present. And when it's present, it does one thing for the living entity. It robs us of our existence here. Literally, it steals our life. If someone comes into your home while you're sleeping or while you're away, breaks the glass and goes in, or jimmies the door and goes in, and then you come home and your monitor, your television set, your computer, your furniture has all been taken, somebody has stolen everything from me. And you make a big uproar. You call the police, you come in, you file reports, you call the insurance, you get money to replace everything. But time is stealing our life every single day. And we're not complaining. Now, of course, as devotees, we are making some complaint. That complaint is to take shelter of the holy name. That's later in the class. So It's interesting, this is only present where we have the presence of the material elements. You have to have earth, water, fire, air, and ether, these temporary elements. This does not take place in the spiritual world. This diminishment of things, this deterioration. Now, it also takes place in the heavenly planets. Don't be mistaken. Oh, if I can just get out of this earthly realm and go to the heavenly planets, then I can enjoy like anything. I've heard up there they live very long, they never get old, they drink soma rasa, all these different things. Actually, the way that they tell that you're beginning to deteriorate in the heavenly planets, everyone in the heavenly planets wears a garland. Everybody. Everybody. And it's not just, oh, I got a garland, thanks. No, it's an amazing garland. But one day you look at somebody and you notice that garland is starting to fade. That means they're beginning to die. That's the way it's shown in the spiritual. So, you know, even the heavenly planets, it's stretched out much, much longer. Just like we were reading in this introduction to here, the four kalpas are only one day of Brahma, and Brahma lives for 100 years, so that's like, what, 432 billion solar years. A little bit longer you and I are going to be around. So this should come as no surprise to us. There's a famous verse from the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 8, verse 16. Who knows that verse? Brahma bhuvanaloka. Who knows it now? No? None of the students? I thought you'd all have this one right on the tip of your tongue. Abrahma bhuvanaloka puna arvartinarjuna mamo pecha tukunteya puna janmana vijite. From the highest planet in the material world to the lowest, all are places of misery wherein repeated birth and death take place. Repeated birth and death take place. But one who attains my abode of son of Kunti never takes birth again. Who's the son of Kunti? I expect some answers on this. Who's the son of Kunti? Yes. Arjuna. Thank you. Yes. So, Prabhupada says in so many places, and in one particular lecture I was listening to on the Srimad Bhagavatam, he says, and I quote, actually everyone, all the demigods, all humans, everyone, they have got their forms. But the difference is Krishna. The form of Krishna, that form is eternal. And the form of the demigods and other forms, our forms, just like we have got this form now, they are not eternal. They are temporary. We're all sitting here, we've got different forms, but as soon as these forms change, we will accept another form, and this form is gone forever. It will never come again. But the Lord's form, Vishnu Tattva means that the form of the original Lord Krishna. Krishna is that original form. Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. So this is the difference. Spiritual energy means that there is no deterioration. There is no diminishing. Therefore, we say time is our enemy. Everybody has an enemy. This thinking process in the material world means friends and enemies. So in this material world, the biggest enemy all of us have, no, I have no enemies, I love everyone. My heart is open to everyone. No, time is your enemy, I'm sorry. Because time is robbing you of your very life. So it's robbing us of our chance to live. But why does that? Because in this world, birth and death is the prominent factor. Everything we do in this world, everything we see, every act is all in relation to the linear concept of time. In other words, we have a start, we have a progression, we have a dwindling, and ultimately we have a demise. This is linear time. Actually, there's, Prabhupada says that there's six ways to determine whether the soul is present. You know, sometimes you'd be preaching to people, you're speaking to them, and well, I don't believe animals have a soul. Oh, I don't believe there's a soul in trees. Well, how do you know there are? Because there's six symptoms, Prabhupada says. Birth, growth, existence for some time, giving off byproducts, dwindling, and ultimate death. These are the six things that indicate, yes, the soul is present. Those things don't happen unless the soul is present. So linear time is all about that concept. We come into being, we're there for some time, things happen in order of the way, and boom, then we're gone. It's a one-dimensional, forward-moving timeline. And as spiritual beings, this goes completely against our identity. It goes completely against our true spiritual nature. Why? Because there is no time factor in the spiritual world. Prabhupada says so many times, time is noticeable by its absence. Nothing in the spiritual world happens in a linear way. Now, some of you may have this experience. Any good science fiction book or movie or story, any good science fiction, has one thing in common. It completely steps outside the concept of linear time. There's always time travel or changing dimensions and all this stuff, because this is the real nature of the spirit soul, not to be bound by these things. So, but sadly, science fiction is just that, fiction. Doesn't really happen. Always they're rearranging the characters and the timeline of the characters and where they're going, where they're coming from, like this. This is the basic concept of any good science fiction plot. Because they're trying in some way to get away from that influence of the time factor, which binds all of us. So, because the progression of time is foreign to our spiritual nature, even the best of science fiction can't satisfy it, because it just ain't real. Now, this lack of linear time, it has a great ability to enhance and increase the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because there is no linear, one-dimensional concept of time in the spiritual realm. Just like last week, I think it was last week, I mentioned in the class about Sri Dham and Nittai and Abhiram and that whole pastime at Govardhan. I won't say it again because I already said it, but it's really quite amazing. And how did that incredible pastime take place? Because there was no linear concept of time. They weren't bound by the forward motion of time robbing them of their life. Krishna's standing there and he says, okay, we're in Krishna Lila, let's go to Gauralila. They all go to Gauralila. Oh, wait, we forgot Sri Dham. Somebody go back to Krishna Lila and get Sri Dham. Oh, wait a minute, your bodies are different. Well, we'll just change all that. Okay, now we'll go back. You know, this is the way the spiritual world works. There's no restrictions like we have here. There's another nice example of that. There was a young girl named Revati. And she was the daughter of King Kakudman. Yeah, actually, Revata was another name he was called. We'll just go with Revata. You know, many times that's the daughter is actually just the feminine version of the father's name. So King Revata and his daughter, King Revati. Now, he was a very powerful monarch. And he ruled vast tracts of land. And he was very prosperous, and it was a very advanced kingdom. And, you know, he was very, very pious. So, not unlike most fathers, he felt that there's really no human man that's going to be good enough for my daughter. Have any of you heard your father say that? No, I don't know who's going to ever marry you. You're so wonderful. Yeah, every father thinks that. There is nobody qualified to marry my daughter. So, in that mood, he decided, who am I going to find? I mean, my daughter's so talented. She's got so many good qualities. Who's going to be able to... Oh, I know who I'll ask. I'll ask Lord Brahma. Now, this king had certain mystic abilities, so he took his daughter Revati with him, and he went to the kingdom of Lord Brahma to talk to Brahma. Now, of course, you and I can't do that. You want to go see Brahma? Sorry, maybe next birth. So he did like this, you know? So he went to Brahma, and he sought Brahma's advice. How do I find a suitable daughter for my Revati? She's so qualified. And he began again, and Brahma said, yeah, yeah, I've heard the story. I know how qualified she is. So when he arrived, actually, Brahma was listening to some musical performance by some of the Gandharas and Apsaras. You know, these are all the heavenly beings that sing and dance. And so this musical performance was going on. And so the king, being of noble lineage and being of higher understanding, he didn't want to interrupt. Brahma, could you stop this thing? I have a question for you. No, who would do that? You walk in the middle of a concert and you have everybody stop because you want to say something? It's incredibly rude. So he didn't do that. He just sat down in a guest seat with his daughter Revati and waited for the performance to end. Performance went on, finished, you know. Everybody clapped, everybody applauded, and so Brahma turned and said, oh, you know, man, King Revata, how nice to see you. Because, you know, Brahma knows everybody. I mean, he created everybody. He's the creator of the universe. So, Brahma, oh, Revata, nice to see you. So what can I do for you? Well, the king bowed very humbly before him. And he said, well, I have a request. I'm looking for a husband for my daughter, Revati. Revati bowed her head very shyly. She just kind of looked up a little bit. And I have a short list of candidates, but some of them I don't know, and I know you know everyone in the universe, so I thought you could kind of tell me, you know, who's the ones to go with, who's not. And Brahma heard the list, and then Brahma laughed. He didn't just laugh, Gargasamhita says, he laughed loudly. Now, imagine this. You go before somebody you respect. You present something to them very nicely, ask them to help you, and they they just laugh at you. Well, you're going to feel insulted. So the king looked at Brahma and like, what? Brahma explained to him, I exist on a different plane than you do. Time is completely different up here. While you've been here sitting watching this drama on Brahma Loka, 27 Chatur Yugas, that's the cycle of the four yugas, Satya, Dwapara, Treta, and Kali, 27 of these have come and gone while you were here listening to this drama. Now, sometimes if you go to the theater, you might sit in the theater and think, oh God, this is like 27, not in a very positive way. So, but here, Lord Brahma explains to him that none of these people on your list even exist. Everybody on earth at that time's all died and gone. All your relatives, your kingdom, your family members, this list of candidates to marry your daughter, they're all finished. You and your daughter, Revati, the only ones left. Your ministers, your servants, boom, it's all gone. So the king was quite astonished by this, quite amazed. And actually he was pretty alarmed too, because, you know, now he's really got a problem finding a husband for his daughter. So, but Brahma comforted him. Brahma said, look, I happen to know that currently the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, and his brother Balaram are having their pastimes on earth. And I recommend Balaram as a suitable husband for your Revati. So you go back to earth and that will all be arranged. So transport yourself back. And, you know, he thought in his mind, we were gone for a few minutes. There's a little theater performance, and then we came back. But it was such a long time, he was shocked. Gargasamhita says he was shocked at the changes that took place. The landscape had completely changed. The environment had completely changed. Over the 27 chapter yugas, the whole cycle of human, spiritual, and cultural evolution had lowered to just an abominable degree. Describes that the race of men had become dwindled in stature, reduced in vigor, and this is the one I like, enfeebled in intellect. Enfeebled. In other words, it was stupid. So the king and Revati, eventually they found Balaram. The king made the proposal to Balaram. And Balaram said, yes, I will accept it. But there's one problem. King touched. You mean more than a problem that I've been gone for 27 chatur yugas? Balaram said, yeah, she's from a different yuga and she's a little bit too tall for me. So Balaram took his plow and put it on her head and brought it down. Okay, now I'm married. And the wedding went on very nicely. So time factor ruins everything for everyone. This king had his grandiose ideas of all these great people to marry his daughter, and when he went to the heavenly planets to find out about who was the best, time took everything away. But we have to remember, time is the main factor in our lives, but it's not the main factor in the spiritual life. So how do we conquer the time factor? Can it be done? Is it possible? Well, yes and no. First, we'll answer the no. We have a material body. Every one of us sitting here, we have a material body and we're going to die. So, no, we can't conquer the time factor. The The time factor is going to move on as long as we have this mature body. But, yes, we can conquer. And how do we conquer? Well, that secret is given in the opening verse to the summary of this chapter. The chanting of the holy name of Lord Hari, which is the only means of stopping the cycle of material life, or in other words, the only means of stopping death. Because by the chanting of the holy name, we come to realize our spiritual identity. And that realization and that realization alone gives us the ability to conquer birth and death. So there you go. How do we conquer birth and death? By taking shelter of the holy name. So what does that actually mean? Is that what it means? It requires two things in the process. There's nine processes of devotional service. Who can give me the first one?
Hearing.
And what's the second one? Yes? Chanting. Hearing and chanting. These two processes, they're both required. And in my notes here, it says, if there are any students left, ask them to identify these two processes. You did, and now you're all leaving. So good. You got the two processes. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smarnam. So hearing and chanting about the pastimes of the Lord. This is what it says in the final line of this same summary. The only boat suitable for crossing the ocean material existence, which is otherwise impossible to cross, is the boat of submissive hearing of the nectarian pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now it's interesting. This statement gives great joy, great hope, great rejoicement. Oh, there is a way to do it. What is that way? By submissive hearing and chanting of the pastimes of the Lord. But there's a caveat. Put in. No, not a caveat. Caveat's not the word I'm looking for. There's a restriction. There's a restriction put in there. One small little word. Submissive. It's a very important word. By the submissive hearing. Now, if we look up in the dictionary, there's an interesting thing. The word submissive is described as an adjective. Interesting thing about adjectives. The definition of adjectives is something that cannot stand alone, that has to be dependent on something else. So that's an interesting aspect right there. But this adjective, this word submissive, means inclined or ready to submit or yield to the authority of another. Unresistingly. Unresistingly or humbly obedient, such as a submissive servant. So, this is the mood that we have to hear the pastimes of the Lord if we expect to be able to be free from birth and death, from the influence of this time factor. We have to do it submissively. It goes on to say that it's marked by or indicating the yielding to the authority of another. What authority is that? The authority of the great sages. The authority of Sukadeva Goswami. The beginning of this chapter, what's the very first Sanskrit verse? Sukadeva Vacha. Sukadeva Goswami is speaking. So we're submitting ourselves to Sukadeva Goswami. How? Through the medium of Srila Prabhupada. Submission to the hearing from the spiritual master. I was just telling Sachin on the way in this morning, I was listening to Prabhupada's lecture, and he said there are two things that are essential. Prabhupada used the word essential. Two things that are essential to become a pure devotee of the Lord. Anybody interested? Whenever we hear Prabhupada say something's essential, our ears should perk right up. What are those two essential things? One, take birth in the family of Vaishnavas. All these kids right here, they've got 50% of it right there. And two, take shelter and initiation from a bona fide spiritual master. These two things are essential to become a pure devotee of Lord Krishna. So that is the mood in which we have to hear pastimes of the Lord. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Regularly listening to the Srimad Bhagavatam in a mood of humility and submission. This is the mood that we need to have in order to be able to hear and chant about the pastimes of the Lord. Otherwise, it'll become not so enticing. We'll be bored by it. We won't be interested. We have to have some actual desire for it. And then by that, we'll remain confined the time factor by repeated birth and death. So the choice is clearly ours. We have the opportunity to hear Srimad Bhagavatam, to hear the explanation of the science of Krishna consciousness from the lips of a pure devotee. We have the opportunity to conquer the time factor by taking shelter of the holy name, or we can be wrapped up in all of these different factors of time which influence even all the way up to Lord Brahma. So this is what I gathered from these verses today. It was either that or I could try and explain the complex explanation of Brahma's timeline versus ours, and it's something I don't really understand so well, so I skipped that whole thing. Anybody else that knows it? But this is what we have to understand. These are the two main points to take from these handful of verses, that we can conquer the time factor by submissively hearing and chanting about the pastimes of the Lord and taking shelter of the holy name. This is the method given for this age. Thank you very much. Any comments, questions, corrections? Right here, Panibhuji.
I have a math question.
A math question.
You mentioned
algebra was not my best subject.
You mentioned the chatur yuga.
Yeah.
Right? That in the story, someone was going to bring 27 chatur yuga.
Yeah.
Right? So that's four like that. So I was wondering, it said that Brahma's day is 1,000 ages taken together to form the duration of Brahma's one day.
Okay.
Such also is the duration of his night.
Mm-hmm.
If that's ages, are we referring to 250 chatur yugas? Or is it actually the cycle of all four at the same time, and that's called an age?
Mm-hmm.
That's the question.
Well, I only know one person in this room that knows math really good. Want to help out here, Madhavati?
What's the question?
It's a detailed question about chatur yugas versus the day of Brahma versus the number of years versus his 100 years times 1,000 equals 1 billion. It's 432 million is the full course, and 432 billion is the full life of Brahma. I looked at the, I had this calculated out somewhere, and I looked at it, and I'm like, okay, I hope nobody asks me this, because this is beyond my... So I'm assuming, since it was just a theater performance, 27 means of the 1,000, 27 of those are spent watching the theater. Is that how you would, you know, because I mean, theater doesn't take that long. And if it does, nobody wants to sit through it. You know, I remember when the Mahabharat played, what was his name, Peter Brooks. They did the big performance in New York. It was right near my house, and I had the good fortune to see it two times. But it was a 9-hour performance. And nobody sat through the 9 hours. They had 3 hours, and they took a break, and then they had another hour, and then they had a big intermission, and then 3 more hours, and they took a break like that. So, you know, it wasn't that long of a performance, I'm assuming. 27 chapter vyuhas, you know, that would have been out of the 1,000 that Brahma lives. So he spent a little time watching some theater. That's the best you're getting out of me as far as math calculations. Yes, Prabhu. There we go. That's true. That's true. Yeah. Any other questions that don't involve math or me embarrassing myself by not knowing it? Madhavati.
It's not involving math, but I don't need the mic. When we talk about the Brahma consciousness, it says that Lord Brahma, while he is sleeping, still 14 mantras come. Like 14 while he's awake and 14 while he's sleeping.
Mm. That question entered my mind as to whether I was completely certain about that, and I don't have a reference point. If yourself or Prangovinda, who I'd expect would, I would appreciate that correction or confirmation, whichever it is.
I'm trying to understand, not correction or
confirmation. Yeah, no, but for me I am. Yeah, because I was thinking, well, wait a minute, if he's sleeping, what's going on? So is it only 14 or is it 28, Pran? Only 14, no 28. It's not 14 at night. Okay, so I correct my adjust my statement in class and make the correction that it's only 14 period, it's not 28.
But all the living entities are being annihilated in the night of
the... Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So there's no
matter in that. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Thank you for that correction. Mahamaya?
Another slightly technical question, but does it say in the scriptures just how big Revati was? I mean, was she twice as tall as Balaram, or was she just a few inches?
The measurements in feet or meters, whichever standard you're using, isn't given to the best of my knowledge, just that she was considerably taller. That's why in proper Hindu marriage, you do not want the wife to be taller than the husband. Although, you know, it's not such a big deal nowadays. But traditionally, that would be the way it was because Lord Balaram did not have really tall ass skin. But, you know, so no, I've never read where there's an actual measurement of how tall she was.
I found a reference.
You found a reference to how tall Revati was?
Yes.
Why am I not surprised, Prango Venenosis? What is it, Prabhu? What is it?
It's in Sanatana Goswami Pada Dasamiti Pani. It clearly says, when the Kukutmi Revatamunu went, did not go to Brahma Loka. He went to Vairaja, where Brahma's office is. You know, in this middle planetary system, in the middle, there's Ilapiti Varsha. And above the Ilapiti Varsha, there's
Ah.
That's where they went.
So they didn't go to see him at home. They went to the office to make a proposal. Which makes sense, because you're going to go to somebody and ask you something. You wouldn't go to their house. You go to their office. Hey, I have a business proposal here. I need your input. So Brahma's got an office.
Yeah. Even that took 3 yugas over.
Wow.
So then, at that time, she was 28 feet.
28 feet. So twice her height.
Yes.
That's why he needed the plow, because he couldn't reach up all that way on his own. Hold on, Chirikram. I don't think he's through. This is getting juicy.
And Prabhupada says to Dhananjay Prabhu, Lord Chaitanya, say Kali Yuga, 7 feet.
Right, right.
So
7 feet for Lord Chaitanya, we've all heard, yeah.
So
28 feet Revati was.
21 feet, 28.
Wow. I hope my granddaughter doesn't grow that big. Yes, Chirikram. Well, Prabhupada does say by the end of Kali Yuga will be like dwarfs, midgets, you know, and cannibals on top of that. Pygmies. All right, we'll finish there with the enlightening information of the height of Revati. I'm glad to know that. Thank you so much. All glories to Srimad Bhagavatam. Hare Krishna.